This is the regular version of the Election Tricycle. If you want to listen to the premium version with bags of extra content, including your questions answered and potted profiles of key players from across our three elections, you'll need to subscribe to one of our host Substacks, starting with Emily's, which you can find at emilyctamkin.substack.com. In future weeks, we'll find new ways for you to be able to access the premium version. But for now, here's the regular show.
Poddo.
You're listening to the Election Tricycle with Tom Hamilton, Emily Tamkin, and Rohan Venkat.
Welcome to the Election Tricycle, a podcast about the elections that are happening this year in India, the United States of America, and the UK, with Rohan Venkat, Emily Tamkin, and me, Tom Hamilton. This week, we're going to be talking about the age of various candidates in various elections, including one candidate whose age has been a major topic of controversy this week. But before we kick off properly, we're going to talk about the results of the Pakistan election, which happened last week. We had an item about that last week, and Rohan is going to tell us a bit about what happened.
Thanks, Tom. Truly remarkable scenes in Pakistan. We spoke last week about how the expectation was that the establishment, which is code word in Pakistan for the army and various security services, would conspire to find a way for Nawaz Sharif, not the most popular politician in the country, to become the prime minister again. And they did so by jailing Imran Khan, the most popular politician, and by taking away his party's ability to contest. And so all of his members had to contest at independence. It so happened that independence won the most number of seats in the Pakistani election. Possibly the worldwide numbers on this, but one of the biggest results for, so to speak, independent candidates in any major election anywhere in the world. But they didn't get enough, at least on paper. We don't know. There's lots of allegations of rigging, lots of cases in court. They didn't have enough for a majority. And so the other two parties are appearing to come together with not Nawaz, but his brother Shahbaz Sharif, likely to be prime minister based on a coalition. Yet it's going to be a deeply criticized and illegitimate government, in part because the independents did win the most number of seats and they're not going to be able to be in government. So it's a remarkable sort of pushback against the establishment in Pakistani politics, and one that leaves the country quite unsettled for a while now, I think.
Thanks, Rohan. Big news in Pakistan this week. There's big news in the US as well this week. If the UK press is to be believed, this is the week when Joe Biden lost the election. Is that true? And if so, why?
All right. I won't do a long and heavy sigh for our podcast listeners, but I will explain what's happening. So for the entirety, really, of Joe Biden's presidency, there has been talk about his age and his mental fitness for the role because he's quite old. He's 81. And basically, there was an investigation into his handling of classified documents. And the gentleman who wrote the report wrote that something along the lines of, you know, if this ever came before a trial, the jury would likely saw what we saw, which is a well-meaning elderly man whose memory is not that good. And then he used some examples like Joe Biden couldn't remember the year that his son died. There were some who were quick to point out that the person who wrote this report was a Republican. Others who were like, he was just laying out what a judicial strategy would have been. But I think we sort of don't need to sugarcoat it. Like, this is not a report that the Biden team wanted, right? I mean, they wanted it insofar as he was cleared of wrongdoing, but they did not want it insofar as it brought issues of his age and mental agility to the fore. The White House then decided to have a press conference. And instead of taking questions one by one, sort of just had reporters shout out the questions. At the end, Biden walks away, then comes back to the lectern and refers to Mexican President Sisi. Obviously, Sisi is president of Egypt, and he was speaking about Israel and the Middle East.
Yeah, a small aside there, which was particularly blew up the Egyptian internet, because Sisi is often called the Mexican because Egyptians often can't criticize their leader, and he's often called the Mexican. And so Egyptian internet was going wild about, you know, is Biden too online?
I saw that. I was like, who showed Biden this meme? Like, but anyway, you know, obviously that becomes the line that everybody latches on to. By everybody, I mean like the media. The New York Times has like four op-eds about Biden's age. And he came out quite aggressive toward these questions, like how dare he say that I couldn't remember when my son died? Like, of course, I feel every passing year. Now I have to be honest. I actually don't think that misspeaking and confusing Mexico and Egypt is that big a deal in general. But that was not the press conference where you wanted to do that, right? Like, you only wanted the story out of that press conference to be, how dare he, I was cleared. And that's the story. Okay, so as Tom says, the media is like, this is the best day ever for Trump's campaign, on and on. But I do think it's worth flagging something, which is that Trump is also very old and also has had his age and mental agility questioned repeatedly to the point where he was taking like mental fitness exams while he was in office. Who could forget the famous, what was it, where he recited like person, man, woman, camera, TV, you know, and has also confused House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Nikki Haley, who is the former governor of South Carolina and former his former UN ambassador. He has gotten Erdogan, the president of Turkey, and Orban, the prime minister of Hungary, mixed up to the point where he really was talking about Orban as though he ran Turkey. Like, he has confused E. Jean Carroll, the woman who accused him of rape, with his second wife, Marla Maples. So I think two things are true. One is that this is just, it just is a bigger issue for Biden than it is for Trump. Now, personally, I think that's because Trump lies all the time while he's speaking. So it's like, well, did he misspeak and get confused, or was that just an outright lie? So it's not as glaringly obvious. Whereas, and has for his whole political career, whereas Biden for his whole political career, like, has made gaffes and said absurd things, but that makes the problem seem worse. Whereas Trump's like mendacity makes his seem sort of not as bad. And like, again, you win and lose according to the rules of the game. And so the Biden campaign has to know this is an issue for them in a way that it's not for Trump. Like, there weren't six op-eds on a single day about Trump's mental fitness. But I also wanted to flag one thing, which is that there was this ABC Ipsos poll that said like 80% of American voters think Biden's too old to serve another term. Obviously horrible. However, if you then read the entirety of the article, 59% of those voters also think that Trump is too old. So here we are in the United States, just racing toward the bottom at lightning speed with two gentlemen who I think are too old. And I personally am unconvinced that that's going to be the big issue for Biden in this election. I think it's a big media narrative that he'll have to work against. And like, that's not nothing. But I think in terms of, does this affect people going out to the polls and does this affect how they cast their votes? I'm not sure. I think actually a much less vibes-based problem for Biden is the war in Gaza and his support of Israel's war on Hamas in Gaza, because we in the United States have the Electoral College. That means you need to win certain states. This is a very real problem in Michigan, which has a very big Arab American population that is very upset with Biden's policy. It is also a big problem in the state of Georgia, which he won Michigan last time. He won Georgia last time. There was a story about how black pastors in Georgia have said, no, you need to, like, we're calling for a ceasefire. You need to change your tack. This is going to be a real problem for Democrats. So to me, the more tangible, real issue, and I know that we're going to speak about Israel's war and about Gaza and about October 7th more in weeks to come. So I just want to flag that, like, to me, that's the actual concrete issue that the Biden campaign is facing. And the sort of like the meta, right? Like the media, the discourse problem is age. That's not to say it's not real. I just don't think it's as pressing. And maybe this is like my own cope, but I just think because they're both, it would be different if he were running against Nikki Haley. Do you know what I mean? If he were running against somebody who was 50 years old or like 60, right? Which is not yet young. But if he were running against Nikki Haley, if he were running against Obama, if he were running against somebody who was like clearly like not 81, it would be a huge issue, I think. Whereas now it's like every time one of them speaks, something is misstated. Right. And so, and then the opposing side latches onto that and is like, see, he misspoke. So that's where we're at with Biden's age.
Yeah. I saw a suggestion that one of the reasons why Biden said, I can't remember, to a number of questions was basically as a strategy under questioning, where if you're being asked a bunch of hostile questions in that sort of environment, you simply stonewall by saying, I can't remember. And if I'd done something like that, people might have complained in some ways, but they wouldn't have given it as evidence of cognitive decline because I'm just not old enough for them to say that. Whereas it would with Biden.
Well, exactly. But like the problem is that this was such a big story because it was fertile ground for becoming a big story, right? Like if everybody believed that Biden was young enough, that this was a non-issue, then of course this wouldn't have blown up because it's a non-story. But the problem is that this was already sort of a question percolating in the minds of people in Washington, media figures and American voters. Like, I don't mean to suggest that this is only a problem for the media and American voters don't care. No, 80% think that he's too old. But for 60% of those people, that is probably not going to be the deciding factor.
There's also the sense that the Biden team doesn't know what to do with this, right? At least from afar, it seems to me that, as you say, it's clear that, you know, or the right way to look at it is that these are both old men. And yet the Biden team both seems extremely defensive about it and also just doesn't want to talk about it. I mean, that's what it appears to be. And I understand the media environment in America is a certain way, but it does feel like they're unclear how to play it.
Yeah, and I sort of don't understand that in that, like, I, in a previous position, like a previous work position during the Biden administration, was asked numerous times to write stories about Biden's age. To me, the more pressing story then, it's different now because we're in the throes of the election, but the more pressing story then was sort of American politicians writ large are very old, right? Like, we had Nancy Pelosi as Speaker of the House. Trump's very old. The Senate is aged. There was a huge story not too long ago about Dianne Feinstein, who was a senator who passed away, but who had clearly, I think, was no longer mentally fit to be in the Senate. And it was sad. It was sad watching somebody's cognitive decline, like, while in public view. And to me, I think there is a broader story in American politics about why our leaders are in their late 70s and 80s. This is a country of hundreds of millions of people. It's not like there aren't other people who could perhaps do the job. And this unwillingness of the sort of past generation to step aside. Interestingly, in an earlier Biden campaign, like back many decades ago, when he was a young man, one of the things he ran on was, it's time to pass the torch. But he's been holding on to that torch ever since. I think there's also a question of, like, should he not have run again? Right? Should he have said, I'm going to be a one-term president, Kamala Harris, over to you? I think the problem is that he picked somebody for vice president who people are very unconvinced could beat Trump for a variety of reasons. I think part of it is that many American voters are racist and sexist. I think also she's proven that her political instincts are very strange. We saw when she ran for president, she was not the strongest campaigner. Like, and she's had 4 years sort of being the butt of many jokes. I don't know how well she would have fared. And so I think that was part of it too. And then if it's not her, it's like, are we just going to have an open primary? Like, who's it going to be? So anyway, all this is to say that Biden ran again. I think it is people who are like, it can't be him. He's the candidate. I think it is. I think most Democrats know that it's too late, really, to shift gears. This whole conversation should have been happening a year ago. And so I think, Rohan, that there's that element too of, like, we're in a situation, we double down. Like, what do we do now? We just have to keep doubling down. I saw a tweet that I actually liked, which was like, if he wants to do this, he needs to just show that he can be president. Like, just go out, be president, make normal speeches, like, do normal appearances. The more you hide from this, the bigger an issue it's going to be. Now, one could say, like, okay, but if it's actually an issue, then it's not going to go away the more appearances you do.
Do you think that the issue of Trump's evident cognitive issues as well, I mean, that just is, it is a real thing, even if it's a real thing for Biden. Is that going to come up in the campaign more and more, or is it just a non-issue? I saw a really interesting tweet, actually, from someone who's not a public figure, just someone I respect on Twitter, who said that one of the really interesting things about the way these things are covered is that everything that Biden does is covered as in, how will this be perceived by your average swing voter? Whereas everything Trump says is covered by, how will this be perceived by the average Trump fanatic? Will it put them off?
That is such a good point. Yes, that is such a good point. I think it's totally true that they're held to very different standards. You both need to unpack why it is, and sort of if you're in the media, it's your job to unpack why it is and to try to not do that. If you're a politician, it's your job to say, okay, like, knowing that this is the world in which we live, what do we do now? I do think that Trump's cognitive issues will now be forced more into the fore, because I think now every time he misspeaks, Democrats are also going to be ready, right, to not let it go. Rohan, did you have a question?
I was going to latch on to something you mentioned earlier, almost as a segue. You mentioned how Biden in an earlier campaign spoke of passing the torch, and now he's on the other end. He's on the other end of that cycle, let's say, and yeah, I mean, this has resonates with what one could say is happening in Indian politics at the moment, which is that when Narendra Modi came to power a decade ago now as prime minister, he was then 63, and there was a ring of older politicians in the BJP who could have laid claim to be prime minister, or at least to be important figures in the administration around him. And he found a way to retire them by creating a committee called the Elder Committee for all those who were over 75. It was the Margdarshak Mandal. It sounded like a nice way of, you know, nice Indian way of respecting your elders by shoveling them off into a little committee that didn't have any say in really in anything. And by selling the idea that at age 75, you need to retire from politics, our politicians are far too old, et cetera, et cetera. Indian politics is also old for an even younger country than America. The average member of parliament is 55, and the median age in India is 30, 31, 32. Our chief ministers, there are a few in their 40s, but they're mostly in their 50s and the 60s, some going up to 77 in Kerala's case, I think. Modi today is 73. And so the interesting thing that you bring up or that we talk about in this context is that in the course of this term going into this election that we have this year, and it's a five-year term in India, if Modi were to be re-elected prime minister, as all indications seem to be, he would turn 75 over the course of this term next year. He turned 74 this year and he'll turn 75 next year. So he should retire by that old measure. But we don't really talk about that old measure anymore, because once it did the job of shoving away the folks who could have challenged him within the party, it's not been discussed as much.
But wait, if you're a member of the Indian opposition, how are you not bringing this up all the time?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know why it's not coming up all the time. Partly to do with a lot of the opposition leaders also being well into their 60s and 70s, and nobody being able to enforcing that for those, even if their leaders aren't, right? Rahul Gandhi, the so not exactly leader of the opposition, but you know, the chief figure of the Congress, is 53. So he's 2 decades younger than Modi, and he has for long claimed to be the voice of the youth. The BJP has successfully pushed back against this and has been successful at it in portraying him as being a dynast and a relic of an older way of thinking in India. And so even if he himself is young, he is representing something older, but also by, you know, pointing to the people around him. And if the Congress were to put a 75 age bar, that would cause serious instability within their own party in terms of lots of other leaders. So nobody has any foot to stand on in this case, which is probably why the general opposition isn't bringing it up. But yeah, Modi's also managed to carve himself out as this particularly unusual leader in Indian politics. He's God's gift to India in that sense, you know, as his party president said, yeah.
Is there anyone within the BJP who's sort of the next generation down, who's positioning themselves to succeed him and talking in age terms? Or is that just too dangerous a thing to do and it's better just to back the leader and eventually he will stop because everybody stops in the end, and then they can have an election or a fight about that then?
It's a good question and a complex one, because power isn't given away willingly in India, even more so than in other places. We often look at places like the UK, where, you know, after a Labour leader loses an election, you just have this, and of course you've seen the bad side of it with the Conservatives just like rolling over their prime ministers. But this doesn't happen in India, where, you know, you lose, but Rahul Gandhi has lost two elections now, and he's still around as the chief leader on the other side. Within the BJP, there's the Home Minister, Amit Shah, who is Modi's right-hand man, not nearly as popular of a politician as him, much more of the dark arts dealer within government who's able to get things done.
He's the muscle, right?
Yeah, who's 59. And then there's a religious strongman, the leader of Uttar Pradesh, the biggest state, you know, the population of Brazil, Yogi Adityanath, who is, I believe, 51, so much younger, who is positioning himself as a future leader. Nobody is saying that we will like challenge Modi at any point. There's no space in the party to do that at all. But there are folks who are angling to take that legacy. But it's unclear. And there's also various movements within the government or within the party and the RSS, their forefathers, that are seeking to portray people here and there. But one of the big things about Modi is that he's not a dynast. He doesn't have kids. He doesn't have a family. And so he portrays himself as being above that. And in doing so, he has to maintain those that separation between him. So there's no like necessary automatic succession for him. And he remarkably pulls in a lot of youth votes. In the last election, he got a lot of the young vote, much more than the Congress.
We had a similar situation in Massachusetts, where Senator Ed Markey was challenged, who's quite old, was challenged by a then Congressman, Joe Kennedy III. And it was sort of like, you need to pass the torch now, to the response to which was like, you're a Kennedy. Like, you're literally from the Kennedy family. You're not the future. Like, you're dining out on the past. And actually, Markey came out like very supportive of the Green New Deal and sort of positioned himself as an elder figure who was working for the youth and for the future, and really was embraced by the progressive left in a way that Kennedy, by virtue of his policies but also his name, was not able to do. So it's a similar thing. And I also think that your point about like, my understanding is that the UP chief minister you mentioned, Yogi Adityanath, is quite like mask off, like hard right monk, you know, not making any bones about what this political project is. And I think there's sometimes here a thought that like, when we just get rid of this generation, you know, the next generation will like, I don't know, fix racism or be more progressive on the environment or be more anti-capitalist. And if you look at the Republican Party, the youth is hard right, you know, and I think I just want to say that like we're speaking about the problems of older politicians, and they are plentiful, but I don't want listeners to get the idea that I'm saying like it'll all be better in 20 years. And I think in many ways, what's coming, in part because of these older politicians and what they've done, will be worse.
I'm really intrigued, Emily, in whether the next generation in US politics is people in their 60s and 70s, actually, or people
right, by the time they get there, yeah. 40s.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you sort of think of people reaching the top, certainly in the UK, the leading politicians tend to be sort of 40s, 50s. That's pretty normal, has been for a few decades, with some exceptions, which we can talk about. And clearly, both of your countries at the moment are skewing older in terms of the very senior levels. But yeah, I don't know if there's a lost generation in US politics, or if they can just sort of keep on coming through. It doesn't feel like there were very many sort of 70-year-olds contesting the presidency this time around in the primaries.
I know. I think you're right. I think, much news was made because we now have these millennial and even Gen Z members of Congress, right? So it's sort of, you have at the top the quite old, and at the, you know, coming in much younger. At least that's who's grabbing the headlines. And I think it's true. Like, you know, we had Obama, but will we have another Gen X president? Do we have to get through all of these boomer presidents first?
It's really struck, by the way, that Obama, obviously the exception, but Clinton, second George Bush, Trump, Biden, all born in the same really quite tight period of the immediate post-war period, about 4 or 5 years of each other.
Yeah.
Over two decades of US politics.
Well, and also, I mean, the other issue here is that was such a specific time in American politics. And I think how these people see the world is shaped by that, right? Like Fiona Hill, in her book on her time in the Trump administration, writes about how she calls Trump Mr. 80s man, you know, and basically says that the rare moments in which Angela Merkel was able to appeal to him was because she brought up issues that mattered in the 1980s, like nuclear war, right? Or like I think part of the reason that Trump was like, we're being taken advantage of by Japan, is because that was a big issue. Like, competition with Japan was a big issue 30-something, like 40 years ago. And I do think that he's an extreme case, but the way that people see the world is, of course, shaped by how they came up. It is not surprising that the younger members of Congress in the Democratic Party are more concerned about climate change than their older counterparts. Like, they're still going to, not to be too blunt about it, but they're still going to be alive, and their children are still going to be alive as this all gets dramatically worse. So there's the sort of practical, should we still have these people running the country? But there's also the sort of philosophical and ideological, which is it fair to the rest of the country that people who were born in a very short period of time and were shaped by that very short period of time, that they're the ones setting the standard? Tom, before we close out, I do want to ask you how in British politics you managed to set the standard that after your 50s, you should not be running the country anymore.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Although there is, I mean, The two big exceptions in recent years are, first of all, obviously Keir Starmer, who's the leader of the Labour Party now, and still, as things stand, they've had a wobbly week, but as things stand, leading the polls and on course to be Prime Minister. And he's, I think, 61, but certainly in his early 60s. So, you know, before retirement age, comfortably in UK terms, but also, you know, he is a little bit older. But we've got just a whole set of people who became Prime Minister in their 40s over several decades, including obviously Rishi Sunak, who is the current Prime Minister in his early 40s, the first Prime Minister in British history to be younger than me. So that's a milestone. Which one reason for backing Keir Starmer to be Prime Minister is that once again that won't be true. I can still aspire one day to lead my country. I don't aspire to do that, by the way. It's you don't have to worry about that.
This podcast is his springboard. You know, this is where greatness begins.
Today, the election tricycle. Tomorrow, the world. Yeah, David Cameron, Tony Blair, both in their 40s as Prime Minister. The other big exception, the really obvious one, of course, is Jeremy Corbyn, who obviously didn't become Prime Minister, but was in his 60s and had been an MP for a really long time when he became leader of the Labour Party in 2015. He was first elected in 1983, so he'd been around. But there were a number of things about him. One was that he'd always been a backbencher, a rebel. He'd never served on the front bench in any capacity. So he was both experienced and quite new to frontline politics at the same time. And the other thing, and this resonated a bit with some of the previous part of the discussion as well about Modi having a significant amount of youth support. I think, you know, Modi and Corbyn are not similar politicians in any way in terms of their politics, and both would agree with that. But Corbyn did have a particular appeal to younger voters, which wasn't particularly to do with his age, but also his age didn't put them off.
I mean, it's more like Bernie Sanders politically. Right.
Yeah, that's a really good example, actually, who I think those are two politicians who were lumped together because they were both prominent in their respective national politics at about the same time. And I think it's subsequently become clear that their politics are quite different in really important ways.
They're very different, yes. But in this way, in this one way, I think there is a similarity.
No, that's absolutely right. One of the really interesting things that comes out of the fact that British politicians tend to be younger is that, like by definition, Prime Minister is the biggest job you're ever going to have. That is, you know, they're not going to be king. So that's as far as it goes. So what do you do when you come out the other side? I mean, 10 years is the absolute maximum, really, that you can do. So Tony Blair was about 54, 55 when he left office. David Cameron was a similar kind of age, didn't serve for quite as long, but came out. It's a time when, you know, these are professionally very experienced people who've just come out of the biggest job they'll ever do, and what do you do next? And it isn't entirely obvious what you do. What Tony Blair has done is, first of all, doing a lot of work around the world, which, you know, your taste may vary about whether you think this is a good thing or a bad thing, given his foreign policy record. But advising lots of foreign governments, and subsequently his Tony Blair Institute is quite a significant sort of policy-making think tank, left-of-centre policy think tank in the UK, which is having a certain amount of influence on Keir Starmer's Labour. And David Cameron, of course, clearly didn't know what to do for quite a while, made a bit of money, wrote his memoirs, built a shed in his garden, and is now Foreign Secretary. So he's brought back to do that job, representing the UK abroad. And to be fair, although it was a slightly left-field appointment, I think it's fair to say that as a former Prime Minister who in that job had to do a lot of international diplomatic work, does have a lot of relationships on the international stage, if you're the Conservative Party now, you could do a lot worse as your foreign policy lead than a former Prime Minister who knows his way around these things. So, you know, he's probably one of the most impressive cabinet ministers that Rishi Sunak's got, for the obvious reason that he really has done it all before.
Yeah. Who says you can't go home? Okay. So for our regular listeners, unfortunately, we have to leave it there. If you are a premium listener, we will have our character profile and our listener question just right after this. But for our regular listeners, thank you so much. Please like, subscribe, tell a friend, tell a hater, and see you or speak to you again this time next week. Take care.
The Election Tricycle is a Poddo podcast hosted by Tom Hamilton, Emily Tamkin, and Rohan Venkat. It is series produced by Nick Hilton. Tweet us at Tricycle2024 and watch a video version of the show at cooler.news. For sales and advertising, please email nick@poddopods.com. podotpods.com.